No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm your host, Jess Root. And tonight, we have our all-Cardinals show. If you're new to listening to the show, Revenge of the Birds Radio, we typically, once football starts, we have two shows a week. One that is all Cardinals, where we talk about the Cardinals, except that's what our show's about. But we focus on the game that happened, things going on with the Cardinals. And then we frequently will have a second show during the week, which previews the team that the Cardinals will oppose. Usually it is with an SB Nation writer from an opposing site. And in fact, later this week, I will have a show with Levi Damian of silverandblackpride.com. But tonight is the All Cardinals night. And for that purpose, Seth Cox is here with us tonight. How you doing, Seth? Seth?
Good, Jeff. How are you?
No, it's all right. Good to have you on, as always. We've got some news with the Arizona Cardinals going on. Obviously, the most pressing was the 22-19 last-second loss in preseason Game 2 against the San Diego Chargers, a game in which the Cardinals jumped out to another early lead, only to fall behind and then crawl back into the game and then lose on a last-second field goal. Some things of note for that game: David Johnson saw his first game action, ran 13 times for 66 yards, caught another couple of passes for 15. Phillip Sims looked pretty good. Carson Palmer and the Cardinals generated some points again, and the Cardinals defense once again did not allow, the Cardinals starting defense that is, did not allow any points. We look at some of the things that are going on right now. There were some injuries that entered that week. Well, and it's kind of the beginning of this week. And if you're listening to us, this was recorded on Tuesday night, so you're listening to it a little bit later as we are getting ready for the Cardinals to have some more practice for the week in preparation for their preseason game 3 Sunday night against the Oakland Raiders on the road. The Cardinals have finished their home set of preseason games and will close out the final two games on the road. A couple things of note: Chris Johnson injured his hamstring the last play of practice last Thursday. However, and initially the prognosis was 1 to 2 weeks. Came back to practice on Monday, and it was back to day-to-day. Gerard Powers has a hamstring issue. They're going to kind of hold him back a little bit. Britton Golden was banged up a little from the game, missed Monday's practice. Earl Watford got an injection. His ankle, he's been practicing with some ankle issues there. Sean Weatherspoon still not available, and the Cardinals did get a few players back. Shaq Riddick, who's, you know, their fifth-round pick, finally back on the practice field after almost no practice, after he's had so many hamstring issues. Jonte Green returned back. Undrafted tackle Rob Chris returned to practice. And so the Cardinals will almost be going with the full deck of cards coming into this week before first cuts, when the Cardinals have to go from 90, and the rest of the league, from 90 players down to 75. In terms of lineup changes, in the starting lineup was Ted Larson, a left guard, as Mike Iupati is out for a few weeks with a knee injury, where he had to have some meniscus repaired. At right tackle, it was Bradley Saul instead of Bobby Massie, as the Cardinals were preparing for whatever the fate of Massie will be to start the season. And then Rodney Gunter, the rookie fourth rounder out of Delaware State, was inserted into starting lineup as nose tackle to replace Corey Peters, who tore his Achilles and was lost for the season. But Seth, what we brought Seth on tonight is we're going to talk about, as we always do, we're talking all Cardinals at Revenge of the Birds Radio. And we're going to talk about some of the what we saw from the preseason game. As always, visit revengeofthebirds.com, our Arizona Cardinals team site, a blog site for SB Nation, one of the many of the more than 300 blogs. SB Nation's revengeofthebirds.com, where you can hear, where you can read more on a daily basis and have the best, interact with the best Cardinals fans in the world. And they literally are all over the world. Cardinals fans out in Australia, New Zealand, in the UK, in Chile, and all over the United States. So it's not just the local Arizonans. So Seth, if you look back on this game, we'll start off big picture. What were the biggest positives that you got out of game two against the Chargers?
I think you have to start with the impact of the rookies outside of maybe your first two picks. I think you look at what David Johnson did, and everybody's very excited about that, and rightfully so. I thought his game was excellent. And as I read about today, and I thought even better than David Johnson has just been what J.J. Nelson has done the first two games, not just in the passing game, but in the return game, kind of setting himself apart as probably the best return man on the roster. Maybe, you know, yeah, Patrick Peterson could say something about that, but also the fact that, you know, he's, you know, John Brown's fast, and then J.J. Nelson's faster. And that's, you know, difficult to imagine because of how fast John Brown actually is. So I think just through the first, you know, second game, you have to be excited by what those two have done in, you know, their limited time. Nelson's been running with the ones, so, you know, he's not seeing much time. And then David Johnson, they kind of gave him the yeoman's, like, journeyman fourth preseason game work, and he came out of there averaging close to 5 yards per carry and ran well against, you know, maybe not a lot of guys that will be playing a lot on Sundays, but against, you know, some good team or some good defenders, and did a good job. And I think that's where you have to be excited. Then obviously the fact that, you know, Rodney Gunter is your starting nose tackle already. I think the fact that you can look and see that your third, fourth, and one of your fifth round picks are going to make an impact, that's, you know, that's something to be excited about. And if it, you know, and it started really on Saturday for all three of them.
And for me, the biggest positive is the continuation of the very good play of the starters on defense. Last week, when they played Kansas City, they were on the field for five plays. They got, well, four plays. They got the first down. I mean, in fact, in both games, the first play that the opposing offense, that goes for first down, but then shuts them down after that. The Cardinals have yet, the starters have allowed a total of two first downs. They have allowed 0 points that they got in a turnover. And so you're seeing a defense that, at least in the initial impact, you're saying, hey, they really haven't lost a beat in Maitland. And if you base it on the end of last season, that they took steps forward. And they can, you'd like to see more of that, and we will see hopefully more of that this weekend against the Raiders. And you must take this with a grain of salt, because it's, of course, maybe more than a grain, because Phillip Rivers was out. But nonetheless, they did it against Alex Smith in one series. They picked him off, and even the second team played very well against the first teamers of Kansas City. The Cardinals' starting defense again played very well. That was a positive, of course. For me, I've been excited since the David Johnson pick. I was thrilled, super, super, super excited of what the potential was, and was glad to see them out there. They worked him a lot of all the time he missed. So they gave him a ton of reps, 13 carries and basically around a quarter worth of work, and a couple of pass catches. So, yeah, I was very, very pleased with with how the defense played and then how David Johnson and just how, aside from, we're going to talk about some of the negative, aside from some of the pass protection issues, you see the explosiveness that this offense has, especially with Carson Palmer, and it didn't, and you mentioned J.J. Nelson. Maybe we'll talk about this a little bit later, but if he keeps playing the way he has, how can you get him off the field? And what in the world's going to happen when Michael Floyd comes back? But let's bounce back to one of the biggest positives. What were the biggest issues you had with the play on Saturday?
Sticking with kind of the draft class, I think you have to start with DJ Humphries. I think disappointment's kind of probably the best word. It's not that you expected him to be, great, but I think you expected him not to be demoted already. And so I think that's where you're kind of upset or disappointed in that. The other part for me is, again, the pass rush or lack of pass rush. The Chargers don't have a great offensive line, so I think just wanted to see a little bit more of a pass rush and ability to get to and sack the quarterback, and again, that was lacking. And it's not from a lack of, from a lack of talent. I just think that these guys are all still struggling to figure out who exactly they are and how to win in the NFL outside of, obviously Lamar Woodley and maybe Alex Okafor, but the rest of them don't really know how to win consistently on the edge. And so it's going to take time, but I think those are the two kind of biggest negatives outside of the fact that Drew Stanton apparently forgot how to play football.
At the same time, though, you look at the line play for him was terrible. Holy cow.
But you have to remember already, and you're right, it was bad, but already you're talking about third-teamers as second-teamers. You've got, whoever they've been playing at left tackle is not even going to be on the roster. What's his name, Bradfield or whatever?
Yeah, Bradfield. He
won't make the team. DJ Humphries is basically right tackle three, so he's a third-teamer. Who was playing left guard? I can't even remember.
It was Earl. I'm pretty sure it was Earl Watford.
Oh, okay. So then who was at right guard?
Anthony Steen, I think.
Okay, so yeah, exactly. So, you're talking about Bradfield and Steen and Humphries, and he's looked bad. So you're basically talking about Lyle Finneline and then Earl Watford being guys that are, at this time, NFL-level caliber offensive linemen, because they've already been beset by injuries and, Bobby Massey kind of being dumb. So, you look at it, and I agree, the offensive line is terrible, but on the flip side, do you expect, outside of DJ Humphries, are you expecting much more from those guys? Maybe Anthony Steen a little bit, but when you're putting out, Bradfield and Steen and unfortunately it looks like Humphries right now, you're going to get that inability to do stuff. And let's be honest about this. David Johnson didn't do a great job in pass protection, and that was, kind of one of the knocks on him coming out, is that, he hadn't been asked to do that in the passing game. But that's what the preseason's for, is to see, if he's improved, and, he hasn't yet, and that's okay, because quite frankly, I'm not sure that's a role that he needs to be worried about right now.
No, not really. For me, the biggest issue was seeing kind of the offense. Now, that's a result of not having two of your actual starters in the lineup. But, Carson Palmer getting knocked down a couple of times. Drew Stanton absolutely getting crushed. They gave up 6 sacks in the first half alone. 2 to Palmer, 2 on Palmer, 4 on Stanton. And you brought up the point, but you still don't want, even against second teamers and especially against the first teamers, you don't want to see in that little time Palmer to go down a couple times. It's inevitable. And people talk about Carson Palmer like he's made of glass or something. He has had injuries over the course of his career. But if you look at the injuries that he had last year, none of them were because of sacks. I mean, the shoulder injury he had was the result of his kind of, you know, when he decided to lower his shoulder into a defensive back. Okay, that was his doing. That wasn't the offensive line. And then the other one that tore the ACL, that was basically a non-contact injury. He just fell down. So yeah. You've got a guy. Palmer's super tough. I mean, it's not so much about I'm not nearly as worried about as him getting hurt, getting injured, as I am about his effectiveness. As we saw in 2013, if he gets jittery at all, if he gets at all uncomfortable in the pocket, he becomes a much less effective quarterback, very average at best. But he's really, really good when he has a pocket to work with and he knows where he's going with the ball. And you don't want to see him get sacked twice in, you know, a quarter. Yeah, and you don't want to see it happen twice in a quarter. You might expect, okay, he's going to get sacked a couple of times. I mean, last year they didn't give up 2 sacks a game over the entire year per average. And you don't want to see that happen in one quarter.
Well, and I think to your point about, you know, him being hit and not being hurt, you know, because of the sacks. But I think part of it is the fact that throughout his career he's been hit so much so that, you know, his body is kind of breaking down to a point. You know, like you said, he's not Mr. Glass. He's not going to, you know.
He's not Kevin Cullen, for crying out loud. Or he's not even Drew Stanton, who gets hurt every year he plays.
Well, yeah. Well, and that's what makes me laugh about everybody being super comfortable with Drew Stanton. I'm like, you guys realize that literally every single year that he's played, he's gotten hurt. Like every year. But, yeah, I think honestly, for me, I think it was okay that he got hit because I think we all needed to see that he could get hit and then get up because we hadn't seen that yet. Because, you know, after the first game, what was it, 5 or 6 plays?
Yeah, he didn't get touched. Yeah.
Yeah, and now we've seen that, okay, maybe, you know, we don't have to worry about him dying, like you said, the first time he gets hit. So, but, yeah, I mean, I think the offensive line is a concern. And I wrote about that, you know, the first week. We all love the fact that they did all this stuff to the offensive line. But it's still, you know, on paper. Like, none of it was in a game. And, you know, before week 2 of the preseason, we've already seen a 40% turnover in the offensive line. And, you know, we've only played 1 preseason game.
And if you think of it this way, you take the offensive line the way it stands right now, you really only have 1 player on that line who has established himself as a legitimate starter in the league, Jared Valdir. If you got Ted Larson starting, he started,
but he hasn't. They were trying to replace
him. They were trying to replace him. AQ Shipley hasn't been a full-time starter for a whole season. In Indy, they tried a replacement, and then he as a restricted free agent, they didn't tender him. So they're, you know, that's Jonathan Cooper, who has yet to show. Yes, he's supposed to have you know, elite type talent, but he hasn't done it yet. And then you have Bradley Sal on the right. So yes, he started 12 games or whatever at left tackle, but guess what? He's not a guy that you're going to find starting on a regular basis on any team. He will a guy that will step in and start for injury. You have 1 legitimate, proven starter on that offensive line right now.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I think you look at it and go, you look at those first 4 games now, or 3 games, sorry, 3 games with, you know, Massey, and you go, wow, that kind of worked out, that the Saints, you know, best pass rushers, a dummy, and got, you know, released. And then, I can't even remember, I think game 2 is...
The Bears and their
pass rush is garbage, unless Jared Allen, you know, got his Hulk Hogan vitamins back.
And then the 49ers, and Alden Smith's gone.
Yep, and you just look at it and you go, wow, the first three games, they really, like, lucked out. And you talk about all the bad luck through the first couple weeks, but you look at that, again, it's all on paper, but you look at that first three games and you go, okay, they might be able to survive those first three games with this offensive line as is right now and be okay and come out okay. And I think we saw that on Saturday. They're going to get Carson Palmer hit, but they're also going to be able to open some lanes for David Johnson and Andre Ellington and who knows about Chris Johnson, and they're going to be able to hold up long enough for J.J. Nelson to run, 60 yards down the field. So as bad as it was at times, it was still good enough to be an above-average offense, which is really, I think, all they're going to need with what the defense could be.
Let me give you your thoughts on this. I saw it live, but I was seeing it live from the press box and not in front of a television, so the view's not nearly the same. The comment from Carson Palmer was on that throw to J.J. Nelson. He thought he overthrew him. J.J. overran it, if that was the case, and had he hit him in stride, it had been a touchdown. Carson said he thought he overthrew it. J.J. thought for a moment that Carson had overthrown it. But the result is you saw that he had to come back to the ball. Now, we know that J.J.'s fast. If you gave it a second look, did it look like that was J.J. overrunning a ball that was originally maybe overthrown? Or is this just malarkey that we're hearing that Carson Palmer is overthrowing the fastest guy in the world?
Yeah, I think Palmer threw it as far as he could, and it didn't go as far as he expected it to. Because I think in the air, I'll go back and look at my notes, but I'm pretty sure it was only like 48 yards. Now, that's from scrimmage, so it was probably closer to like 55 yards. But how long was the pass play total? I forget.
57. It was 57.
Yeah, so it was probably about 55 yards in the air, because he didn't go much further after he caught it. So it might have only been 52, but it wasn't, I don't think he threw it as far as he thought he did. I think when he released it, he put all he had into it, and he was like, oh, crap, I way overthrew that. But then J.J. Nelson's just really fast. Like, there's speed that we don't understand, and, Devin Hester was one of those guys, and J.J. Nelson, while I'm not putting him on that tier right now because, Devin Hester's making a case to be a Hall of Famer, and all he was a punt return man, really. Kick-in punt return man. But, like, J.J. Nelson has that same type of speed where he can, when you talk about having a step on a guy, his step is basically five because he's gone before those guys can react. And that's kind of what that was. I mean, he got that one step, and I think Palmer thought, oh, crap, I overthrew him. And then all of a sudden it was, an underthrown ball that should have been a touchdown, but Palmer just didn't realize. And it might have been he just put too much air on it, something as simple as that for right now. Because, we're only, 4 weeks into them working together, really?
Yeah.
5 weeks, maybe? I mean, that is just not going to be there in 5 weeks, especially with that kind of speed. Because, even when Chad Johnson was in his peak, he didn't have that speed. And that's what makes J.J. special. And, you and I joked about it in the draft preview and then after the draft. But, he's wispy. I mean, you probably stand on the field and are bigger than him. But,
I'm not built like I haven't been his size since my junior year in high school.
Yeah.
But I never could run a 4.2, so.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is you have to catch him to be able to hit him. You have to catch him. And I don't know if anybody can if Palmer puts the ball out there correctly.
So let's talk about David Johnson. We'll talk a little bit more about Nelson a little bit and his impact. But we got David Johnson finally gets on the field. how good can he be? Because he had a couple of hesitant carries to start with. Bruce Arians joked about the, hey, getting out of dancing soon if he wants to dance, go and dance with the stars. He likes his one-liners. I think he really gets into that, and so he makes sure to say some funny quip to get the reporters to laugh. It works. It works, by the way. It's really funny to hear it. But, I mean, if this is exactly how it went, he danced out there the first couple or wasn't seeing the holes quite right, and then all it took is one talking to from BA and mention by Carson Palmer, and then all of a sudden he was a vertical runner? that is really encouraging in terms of the type of player he is to coach.
And for me, I think it was more that he finally got hit. You know, that was something that you and I had talked about after they drafted him, and even last week a little bit. He's never been hit. Like, when you go back to Northern Iowa, in his, you know, quote-unquote film that we have, he never really had to run for tough yards, right? Everything was kind of spread out, and he had a lot of big lanes. Yes, he got hit in terms of, you know, being tackled, but it's a different animal in the NFL to be just, you know, have to go head up with the man in front of you and kind of, you know, as Ron Wolfley said, you know, put your foot in the ground and whatever, headbutt somebody and whatever Wolfleyism he comes up with to say, you know, talk about it. But it's just a different animal. And I think, I don't want to say scared because that's disrespectful, but I think it was just that he'd never been hit. I mean, his own team, you know, they're not going to really give you a lick in camp like the San Diego Chargers in preseason game two. When you're, you know, when you're a second team or a third team guy trying to make a roster, you know, they're going to come in and they're going to try to take your head off. And I think there's just that hesitation and, okay, how bad is this going to hurt? And then he realized, okay, I'm 6'1", 228 pounds. There's not very many people as big as me out here that are as fast as me and can kind of create the momentum that I carry with me. And so let me deliver the blows as opposed to receiving them. And I think you saw that later as the game went on. He still had some hesitation runs. Sean Church, if you guys follow him at NFL Church or at Church of NFL, wanted to. He had a couple of good gifs of his runs, and one of them was kind of that where he was head up with the cornerback, and instead of trying to run through him, he tried to run around him, and that's just experience, and, you know, maybe that's the dancing that Bruce is talking about. I didn't pay attention to what play it was in order, but, you know, it's a different speed, and it's a different physicality, especially coming from, you know, D1AA Northern Iowa to the NFC West, which is basically the black and blue division now. It's a different animal, and you know, I honestly, can you blame him for that? Those were the first true hits he's taken in the NFL. So I, you know, I can't really blame him for running hesitant, I'll put it, as opposed to running scared. So I'll put it that he was running with hesitation as opposed to being scared.
And, well, for me, it was just finally nice to see some promise. I mean, the last time we saw that story, I mean, aside from Andre Ellington, they talked about the promise that he had early on, but they were kind of protecting him, even that first preseason, because they never thought that he was going to be an every down back. They never believed that he could.
And he's still not. You can tell by the fact that they're trying to find somebody to pair with them again.
But Ryan Williams, you saw it briefly before, you know, before he tore up his knee. Beanie Wells, you saw it in that first year. I mean, they didn't work out. But to see a kid like Johnson and to finally see a running back that they intend on actually using as opposed to the fourth string guy picking up yards, or William Powell a couple of years ago being the top rusher in the preseason. This is a guy you saw promise in his first game. You said, wow, you know, he's got some balance. He's got some agility. He can break some tackles. And you're like, Yeah, this you could do that, and you even see him in his pass routes. The couple times he gets the pass, he just looks good out there playing catch. And it's the, one of the first teams you've seen. Obviously, he's still got to show more, but you see him, and you're like, there's something there. And which it kind of reaffirms all the excitement that a lot of people have had about Johnson heading into this season.
Well, I think you saw something that, you know, you and I talked about. I don't know if I ever wrote about it, but you and I have talked about personally before, and before, you know, BA made the comment even, I said, you know, he kind of has a little Matt Forte to him, and that you kind of saw that. You know, he's not a big play guy like Andre Ellington, where, you know, he's gonna get you an 80-yard run every 20 carries. But you know what he is? He's a guy that can make a 15-20-yard run and then come back and make a nice 5-yard run that should have been a 1-yard loss, and then go back out and get 7 yards. And that's what we saw. And like you said, that's what's encouraging. That is a true NFL running back. You know, no offense to Andre Ellington, he's a very good bit piece, but you need somebody that can go in there, stick their nose in between the tackles, and do the 4.3 yards per carry thing really well. And I think
instead of averaging 4 to 5 yards a carry, but you're getting those because of the home run shots.
Yep.
Larod Stevens howling to that. Chris Johnson's made a living off of that. And when you're feast or famine, your running game stops in a hurry. And if you get a guy, if Johnson can be that guy to be consistently 3-4, 3-4, 5 yards, then you break off a 15-20 yarder every once in a while, and what do you get? You've got a very, very effective running game.
Yep, and I think we saw the hopeful beginning of that. And the one thing I'll say, and I wrote about this before the first preseason game, and I think it stands, you know, it stands now even more. Don't be discouraged by an inefficient running game now. Maybe week 8 at this time. I would have said week 4 before, but now with Ayupati out and Massey out and the reshuffling of the offensive line already, maybe week 8, depending on when Ayupati comes back. But don't be discouraged if the running game's not really great, you know, in game 1 or 2. Because, again, you're talking about maybe just 1 or 2 quality NFL offensive linemen.
And your mauler of a run blocker is the guy.
Yeah, your best run blocker's out. And Bobby Massey's maybe the 3rd best after Beldier. So, you're missing two-thirds of the best blocking on your line in the run game. And David Johnson hasn't run behind that first team offensive line at all in past. I mean, he got hurt before all those dominoes fell. So it's going to take time to develop that cohesion and that, you know, and that understanding of each other. And so if there's flashes of brilliance and then there's games where you're getting, you know, 15 carries for 45 yards, don't be upset, because just remember it's going to take time. And I think you saw a glimpse of it this week in both aspects. I mean, yeah, he finished with, 61 yards on 12 carries or whatever it was. But you saw the baby steps that are being taken in the run game. And it's going to happen. It's just going to take some time.
Let's talk about the quarterback battle that seems to have captured the imagination of Cardinals fans, that being Logan Thomas, the 4th rounder out of from last season, and the undrafted rookie. Not just any undrafted rookie. He was a tryout player. He was not among the undrafted signings. He came to rookie camp as a tryout player. He got signed, and he seemed to stuck around, and Sims played effectively. He's looked much better than many expected, and many people believe he's looked better overall than Logan Thomas. So We even have a few, I'll even call them delusional, delusion fans saying, oh, he needs to get some snaps with the first team just to see how we... No. No. And no. But where do you stand on the Logan Thomas, Phillip Sims quarterback battle?
I stand where I stood from the beginning, and that's Phillip Sims is a nice idea and for a practice squad. Sorry, the term escaped me for a second. He's a nice practice squad player. I don't think he's anything more right now. And I know that he went 8 of 13 for 0 touchdowns and 0 interceptions, and so we're pretty sure that he's the next, you know, Johnny Unitas at this point. But he was going up against guys that aren't going to be on NFL rosters, and he's running the Logan Thomas 2014 preseason offense of, okay, here's your read, make the throw, you know, and that's okay. Like, that's what you expect from this guy. At least that's what I do. Like, I don't expect him to come out and run the Carson Palmer offense. I mean, I don't know if you do, but, like, he's been with the team for, what, 3 or 4 months? He's not going to be ready for that. And that's why I think he's the perfect practice squad candidate, because he's a kid with some mobility and good size. I don't know how strong his arm is. It doesn't always look it doesn't look really strong all the time. It has some strength, but I wouldn't say it's really strong. And so I wonder what his effectiveness would be as, you know, that guy being able to get the ball down the field consistently. But, I think Sims is a nice practice squad candidate, and I think if you're going to keep a third quarterback, I think it's Logan Thomas. So, I know he was 0 for 4, and those were the four most overanalyzed and scrutinized passes in the history of preseason football, especially since we talk about Phillip Sims in game one getting, you know, not getting help from his receivers, but then we don't talk about
Thomas has been let down 2 weeks in a row. I mean, yep. He had the interception that was really a Jerron Brown drop. He had Britton Golden drop a touchdown. Then, you know, I thought perhaps that Logan misplaced the ball on that throw to MoMa. But if you look if you look at the way he threw it, that was really pretty, because it was softly floated to the outside shoulder of MoMa, who turned the wrong way and then looked awkward as he tried to make some acrobatic catch that failed. But if he turns the right shoulder, he turns the outside shoulder and looks for the ball on the outside where there's open space, that's a touchdown. Then there was the bad throw, which wasn't a horrible, but it was an unsafe throw, is the one where Britton Golden got lit up. And even then, you think Golden probably should have caught the pass, even though he did lead them right into the safety. So it was an unwise pass overall in terms of football, but it wasn't a horrible pass. Logan Thomas should have a couple of touchdowns, and so far in the preseason with no interceptions. And yeah. And that was the most impressive thing to me when you saw is that throw to MoMa, because we've been talking about how he's all fastball. That was one of the prettiest touch passes you'll see.
I agree. And so I think Logan's doing a good job of running more consistently the actual Bruce Arians offense. And so I think you continue to watch his growth and you know, we knew coming in it was a 3-year plan. Like, I don't know why all of a sudden we're upset that after, you know, what, five?
One plus.
Games total. What?
After one plus years, you know, barely after a year.
We're just like, oh, no, I mean, he can't do it. So, I mean, imagine if the fan base treated Earl Watford that way, right? Like, he would have been cut.
Yeah, yeah.
And to be fair, they kind of did, because last year I remember everybody was all about Anthony Steen when he got signed as an undrafted free agent, and that, you know, he was going to make the team over Earl Watford. So maybe it's consistent, but I think we get too excited about the shiny new object as opposed to what type of growth we've seen, and I think you have to be excited about, like you said, Thomas has done a good job of making reads in his offense, and he's also done a good job of learning a little more about changing speeds and how to correctly, you know, identify and change how he's throwing the ball. So we'll see as that goes along. I think we'll learn more this week if Sims gets the call as the third quarterback, right? I mean, even Ryan Lindley got the call the second game, I think it was, against Minnesota as the quarterback three. And we haven't seen that for Sims yet. Maybe that happens this week against the Raiders.
That could be. Now, the one thing, there's a lot of positive to what you see from Sims. One is he seems to really have a hold of the offense that he's been given. And you also, it's really interesting kind of the perspective that you hear. Quarterbacks in the pros who bounce from system to system, and so they don't really fully develop a la Alex Smith. But then you also have the other side of that is now Phillip Sims, who has gone through like five different offensive coordinators in college because he played at three different colleges and things like that. He understands the concept of learning things quickly. He mentioned that himself, and so picking up an offense on the fly is something he's kind of been doing for the past 2-3 years, and that's a plus when you have a guy like Logan Thomas who came in and had really no notion of what an NFL offense looks like. Phillip Sims has that, and he's got some poise in the pocket. He's made some nice plays. He's looked good. Again, it's you have to consider the competition, but there is a lot there to be positive about. I still overall, I get my hopes up a little bit, but honestly, this is a guy, he's a guy with eyesight vision problems who didn't get drafted, who didn't get signed right away. Yes, he's got the right mental makeup. I don't know if it's going to be more than that, because do you really think that, does anyone think if they're moving forward that Phillip Sims is going to be even a decent backup, or that potentially he could be a starter? That would be some story for a kid that didn't get drafted at all and didn't get picked up as one of those undrafted free agents. He made it as a trap. That's a great story. There's a lot to like about him. In the end, you say he's a good practice squad quarterback. I don't even know if I don't see how the Cardinals could keep even three quarterbacks on the roster and then have a fourth guy in the practice squad. That's just too many quarterbacks to actually do anything in practice with.
Well, and that might be, and the other thing, and you hit on it, and I think a lot of people overlook it. Why did he have to go to three colleges? And it wasn't because, you know, he was so good that he transferred to three different colleges.
No, he got beat out by A.J. McCarron, which, understandably yeah. So. But then he had academic issues, and that's at Virginia, which is why he ended up going down to, Winston State College. That's Woodson State, Alabama, whatever that name is.
Yeah, and so, you know, you look at it, he's a good kid, he works hard. Like I said, I think he ends up on the practice squad. I understand your point of why he wouldn't, but I think he ends up on the practice squad. A lot of people are like, oh, he'll get claimed.
No way.
People understand, if you claim him, they have to keep him for at least 3 weeks. On the active NFL roster. Like, it's an active 53-man spot on the NFL roster if somebody claims him, right? Like, this isn't, oh, we're going to put him on our practice squad a la the Chargers and Ryan Lindley. Like, he is on the active, like, he may not be active on game day, but he takes up one of only 53 spots on the roster.
Yeah. I mean, he could get signed to someone else's practice squad if he clears waivers. But he'd be more likely, if that's to happen, to come back here, I would think. But, I mean, really, let's just for 2 minutes, think about this. In a quarterback-hungry league, a guy that could, if he ends up getting cut, who can't beat out Logan Thomas, they're really, I mean, aside from some positive things you saw, there's not going to be anyone in the league just running to claim him off waivers. He's a guy that you bring. I mean, if Ryan Lindley can get a job in New England, then I guess anything's possible. But just there's no, so few players get, you know, of those cuts of those young players. So few get, you know, picked up on waivers. It's not a lot. It's a few. We saw Walt Powell do it, but there was a little bit of promise there, and perhaps that they already had him on their radar when the Jets did when they in the draft and just never got around to it. So I don't know. I think that talk is absurd. I don't think there is any chance anywhere. And some people were saying, some of the comments that we're reading on our site says, oh, the 49ers or the Seahawks. No, they have no interest in claiming him off waivers, maybe practice squad to get a few insider bits of knowledge. But other than that, heavens no.
Yeah, and honestly, like I believe that Logan would have more interest in the NFL because he has unteachable things like size and arm strength, and
he makes some throws that they are throws. They are drop your jaw. So that's one of the prettiest things I've ever seen. Some of the throws, especially in really tight windows, if he can zip it right in there, put it right on the receiver's belly. You don't see quarterbacks be able to do that.
Yeah. And so that's like I said, I like Sims. Like, I'd love to keep him on the practice squad and give him a year in the system to develop and see what he can become. But this whole, like, Drew Stanton struggled, so let's give him the chance to run the two of them.
Yeah, no one's been, if those people say that, no, they haven't listened a single word to Bruce Arians. Nothing's changing with one and two, period.
Yeah, so, no, I don't, I think in the end, I think Thomas makes the roster and Sims is on the practice squad, but I can see where you're coming from, where maybe neither of them are on the roster or practice squad, so I just think with the way that the Cardinals are built, they probably need multiple quarterbacks on the roster. And I mean outside of Drew Stanton, because, like we said, Drew's kind of injury prone.
Yeah, I personally picked this up on my last roster prediction. I think they go two on the active roster. I think they go, as of right now, I see them going Palmer, Stanton, and then one of those two guys ends up on the practice squad, and it might end up being that for the team, it's a wash. They may go, well, no, I know we're not going to lose both of them. So as long as we end up with one, we're good. What about let's talk about the receiving now, the receiving battles. I mean, there's really no battles at the top. Obviously there's Fitz. Obviously there's John Brown. John Brown appears, if you look at way the offense is, you see that John Brown is sort of the receiver that they try to feature. They try to move around, try to get him. And Larry Fitzgerald's role is, okay, once they've opened things up around there, he's going to make some nice plays in the middle of the field underneath. That's kind of how they have things designed. My question is, and this is, yes, I'm sure this is prisoner of the moment, but you look at how that offense looks with both John Brown and J.J. Nelson on the field. And yes, you want receiver depth. What happens when Michael Floyd gets back? Because the offense wouldn't look quite the same. Like, what if J.J. Nelson makes it so it's really hard to take him off the field? Then what do you do? I mean, do we see the Cardinals abandon the tight end? do we see them otherwise? You're taking off you're taking off a playmaker off the field. If, and this is if, it's a big if J.J. Nelson continues on the curve that he's at, because, you know, the talk where he's ahead of where John Brown was a year ago, that seems absurd to me because of what he was able to accomplish. And it floors me to think that this kid could be anything as a receiver, because he really wasn't much as a receiver even in college. We knew he was going to be a special teams guy. We never expected him at all to play on the field as a receiver.
No, we didn't. But I think this is something that, you know, we have talked about for, 2 years now?
Yeah.
That Nelson and Brown, John Brown, are, you know, Arians-type receivers. He likes guys that can win on different levels of the field in different ways. Obviously, Carson was upset because of the miscommunication on the smoke screen that was missed by JJ after his big game. But I think the other reason he was so upset was because he was so open and JJ probably would have scored. And I think Carson was upset that that's where, you know, that's where they're going to make a lot of plays, you know, and he's going to make a lot of money, is that all of a sudden, you know, a guy's got to play 15 yards off because he needs, you know, that cushion to not get beat deep. So all of a sudden they can throw a quick out, you know, smoke screen out to JJ or John Brown, and those guys, you know.
All it takes is one shift, and they've got 60 yards.
Yeah, and I think that's why he was upset, because Carson understands now, like, hey, we can't do any hand signals. We can't do anything, you know, obvious. We just have to be able to look at each other, and you have to understand and sense, okay, this guy's playing 12. The cornerback had a 12-yard cushion. I went back and looked. There's a 12-yard cushion. JJ has to understand that. Like, okay, I got a 12-yard cushion on a 1st and 10 or 2nd and 10, whatever it was. I have to understand that. Look back for the smoke screen initially, because it's going to be wide open right there, and it's going to allow us to make a big play.
At the back end, I'm still not sure whether or not we've got the battle basically for number 6, and that's between Britton Golden and Jackson Shipley. Golden still is number 1 in the return game, based on the depth chart. That's easily changed. We'll see what happens this week. He hasn't made plays on the field receiving-wise yet, although you do see he kind of has his own package right now on the offense, even with the first-teamers. When you see the Cardinals go with a 3 tight end, or they go 2 tight with Robert Hughes on the field, their one receiver has been Britton Golden. Not sure what that means, but has Jackson Shipley done enough, do you think, to pass up Golden? And mind you, Golden is a guy they're well familiar with. They like his speed. Again, he's faster than Shipley. But he has potentially the return game, because Shipley's behind a couple guys in the return game. Do you think that there's anything, is it close yet? Is there something that Golden needs to worry about? Because he, you know, obviously he's dropped a touchdown. He hasn't been awful.
No, I mean, honestly, it's just, I think for these guys, it's just about getting on the roster. You know, not to beat a dead horse, but I would think Shipley's a nice candidate for the practice squad, wouldn't you? Like,
yeah, he's definitely, I think, unless someone else really likes him, he's a lock for the practice squad.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, he's going to either be on a roster or the Cardinals practice squad. Like, maybe he takes a, I don't know, do they do bigger paydays on other practice squads? I don't know how that works.
No, practice squads are all the same.
It's all flat rate, right?
Yeah.
So they can't offer you anything. So maybe he would take one, like, if the Browns offered him a practice squad spot, because he would probably have a chance to get on the active roster much quicker. But I just, like, everybody's so obsessed with this battle. Like, in the end, if they need Jackson Shipley or Britton Golden for significant time, something's gone awfully wrong during the season. Right? Like, it's a good storyline because it's
Seth,
nice
you're being a buzzkill.
You know,
you're being a preseason buzzkill.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's nice because the storylines are, quarterback 3 or wide receiver 6 right now. Like, yeah, there's probably and cornerback 4. Like, those are the storylines for the Arizona Cardinals. Who would have seen this coming, you know, when Arians took over 3 years ago? But
right.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, it's golden because of experience, and Shipley gets on the practice squad, and then, you know, God forbid anything happened to the top 4 guys, you know, and that's including Michael Floyd. I think you bring in, you know, you just can bring up Shipley, but, you know, Jerron Brown, Britton Golden, and Jackson Shipley are basically, to me, interchangeable entities right now. That, yes, they're good ball players, but if you're having to count on any of those 3 guys, you're in trouble. But just for experience, because what this is this Golden's second camp or third camp?
Second camp with the Cardinals, but third year, because he was picked up during the season of 2013, I think it was like week 4, they claimed him off the Bears, and then he made that 54-yard catch, and then, you know, tore his hamstring.
Yeah.
And
yeah, so I think, yeah, so it's year 3 of him in the system. So I just think Golden right now kind of offers a titch more, and it's only because he's got 3 years of being in the system, whereas Shipley is probably a more physically, not maybe gifted, but more physical type receiver, and offers a difference. Because Golden's kind of a minus version of Brown and Nelson, whereas Shipley's kind of, you know, a different, he's more of a true slot guy that can, you know, work the underneath and the intermediate, as opposed to Golden being another smallish deep threat type.
He's a very poor man's Danny Amendola, I would say.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that's not a bad thing. That's just what he is, and that's okay.
Now, what about the offensive line? I mean, we still are, they bring in Lyle Sendline, but no movements happen. They say it's neck and neck. You got to get the idea that game 3 is kind of where movement happens. If Lyle's going to take the starting job, this would be the week that it happens. It honestly would surprise me. It would surprise me if he doesn't win the starting job. Because in the end, I thought that's why they brought him on. Then again, it might have been the case that it wasn't the fact that Shipley was doing so poorly, but rather it was Ted it was Larson that was doing so awfully at center that wasn't doing well enough, and they've completely, more or less, taken him off center duties completely and playing guard. Do you see any change there? And then the talk this week of Watford getting some reps to compete for the right tackle's job while Massey's out. Do you see those playing out any differently, or is it going to be just how it is right now, Shipley at center and Sowell at right tackle?
I think, and this is just maybe me wishing more than anything, hoping, but I think that in the end we're going to see a line of Beldier, Larson, Sendline, Cooper, and Watford. I really wish it would have been Valdir and Watford, and then Humphreys over at right tackle. But, you know, you deal with what you deal with, and I think in the end Watford's going to beat out Sal, because Sal wasn't very good either on Saturday evening. Like he, you know, we talked about how he was good at pass blocking, and then, or better than DJ at pass blocking, but then you watch it and you're like, ugh, that wasn't what we're putting him in there for. So I think Watford, as long as, you know, he doesn't pull a DJ and just go out there and look lost, I think he could, you know, win that right tackle position. And when you look at it from a physical ability standpoint, he offers more than Sal. So I think this is me more just hoping that it's not Sal, but I think it'll be Watford. And I think in the end, Sendline's going to win out unless you get a, I don't know. I haven't been impressed with Shipley. I don't know. Have you? I don't know what you think.
The word that I have from someone I know, I heard from a guy who has a guy in the locker room. Shipley is a really bright guy, knows the offense, not nearly as physically gifted, and gets beat. But in terms of his knowledge of he's really smart and knows the offense, he just gets beat sometimes.
Yeah, and then I think that's kind of what you see, is he's just physically kind of limited. And so, I don't know, maybe he does start out the year. I don't know. I think more than anything, I'm hoping that you see the best five right out there, and I'm not convinced that that's the five that are out there. Well, I know it's not with, you know, Upati out, but even I think the best five that are available in game one, I'm not sure that that's who are sitting atop the depth chart right now, at least to me. So we'll see what happens, but I think Watford can win that job. Shipley and Finline, I was with you. I thought Finline was coming back to start. We know how BA is. Like, he is, you know, we knew Shipley was his guy from kind of the start.
Yeah.
And
we know how... That's what was Lyle. That's the thing. Lyle was his guy, too.
But to be fair, he said, like, I wanted to sign HQ Shipley for, what, 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
So maybe his idea was to replace Lyle all along, and that, he just wasn't able to get the guy that he wanted. But, I mean, we know how he gets with, like, when he has his quote-unquote guys. Like, he tends to allow them to play themselves out of a position as opposed to, you know, replacing them.
In terms of what you're looking forward to this weekend in Game 3, is there anything that stands out as sort of the must-see things that you want from the Cardinals in Oakland?
Yeah, I want to see Jared Valdir keep Khalil Mack from killing Carson Palmer. That's very important. Because Khalil Mack's probably 2 years away from being the best defensive player in football outside of J.J. Watt, because that guy's a freak. I want to see on the offside, I would like to see the Cardinals pass rush, generate a pass rush. Because, again, it's not a great Oakland offensive line, so you're getting to see, you know, maybe bottom third of the NFL offensive lines, and you're still not seeing the production from the pass rush that we're wanting to see. And it's from, you know, 1 to 8 or however, whatever the depth chart is. I mean, we're talking from Okafor down. Like, we haven't really seen the production yet. So we'll see what happens. And then the other thing is obviously just the offense continuing to be fluid and in motion. I think, you know, everybody wants to see them in the preseason go out and score every possession. I was really excited to see them get their ass kicked, excuse my language, the first series, and then come back and respond. Because that's more realistic to me than the video game that they got to play against the Kansas City Chiefs, you know, in week one. So I think, you know, watching them get out there, get pushed around a little bit, and then come back and respond with a seemingly easy drive down the field for a touchdown. Again, complemented by the big plays of what Bruce Arians likes to do. I think you want to see that again, maybe, and since it's supposed to be a half, we'll see if it really is a half, but, you know, since it's supposed to be a half of a game, maybe they get 4 possessions, maybe. I mean, hopefully 4 possessions. So maybe 2 touchdowns and a field goal, something like that. Really effective, but we'll see what happens.
And what I want to see is just to continue, because I've liked what there's been. You feel like with what they've done offensively and defensively among the starters that they can win a lot of football games. Let's keep it up. Let's see that continue to see the same sort of consistency. And that's something to build on, even with a banged up offensive line, that they can continue to, on offense, make plays and move the ball and recover. I want to see that.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
So they went up against the Chiefs team, you know, and there was one series for the starters, and they were really good. But then they went up against Philip Riverless San Diego, and now they're going up against a maybe top, or maybe bottom, you know, bottom five, seven offense in the Raiders. How much stock do you put into who, how well the defense has played? Because they are dominating the teams they should dominate and the aspects they should dominate, but do you worry at all that they haven't really faced any, you know, not elite, but like top, you know, 10 offenses yet?
And then they open the season against the Saints. That's a concern. Yeah, that's a legitimate concern. When you look at what they've done so far, if they can dominate against, like, the way they, it's been domination. Then that means you, I think, that can translate into doing well or doing more than decent against really good offense. They're going to face some good. They're going to face New Orleans in week one. They're going to end the season near the end. They're going to be playing Green Bay. So the defense has to be there. And they're going to play. They're going to play Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, who now, you know, they like to put up points. And they've got the, you've got Antonio Brown. You've got Le'Veon Bell. And if you see them dominate against poor teams offensively or even below average team, that still gives you optimism to say that they're going to be good against all the other teams.
Right, and that's kind of where I'm at. The fact that they've been so overwhelmingly good against bad teams, I think that bodes well, because I think if they were just, you know, getting out with field goals or, you know, kind of the bend but don't break that we've seen in the past, I think that would be more of a concern. But the fact that they've just physically dominated, as you said, the Chiefs for one series, but then the Chargers, I think that's important.
And then that translates across. You're going to face some limited offenses in the division. Guess what? St. Louis, they're limited offensively. San Francisco, anymore, it looks like they're probably going to be a little bit limited on offense, maybe. And that bodes well. That bodes well, especially in the division. Anything else of note to mention before we close the show as we look ahead to Sunday night's game?
I think all Cardinals fans should just be happy that Evan Mathis ended up in Denver and not in Seattle.
Yes. And as a Peyton Manning fan myself, I applaud the move. I applaud the move because if the Cardinals, if my point of view, if the Cardinals can't win a championship, I want Peyton Manning to win all the championships. That's my personal view on that.
I'm with you on that. So yeah, I was happy, but I'm also happy that he's not going to be blocking for Marshawn Lynch and Russell Wilson.
Yes,
that makes me happy.
Revenge of the Birds Radio, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is another episode of Revenge of the Birds Radio. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Rude. This was our all Cardinals show for the week. Listen for later on in the week when I bring on Levi Damian from SilverAndBlackPride.com as we talk. It'll still be Cardinals-based, but it will be getting to know the enemy as we have our preview show with an opposing team. So this is our all-Cardinals show. We will have our preview show later on the week. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening.
Have a good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.